On the show today, we have humanity's very own Jill Nowacki giving us a very in-depth conversation on the changing employee and potential employee expectations that we are seeing right before our eyes right now. Super fascinating stuff here from Jill, so check it out. Jill Nowacki from Humanity. Jill, how are you today?
I am doing great, Mike. Thank you for having me back.
You are welcome. You are welcome anytime. Come on the show anytime you want, as many times as you want, because you always have great things to say. Not only you have great things to say, but you're a great person as well. So we enjoy both of that. It's a great recipe for a fine, fine guest. And so we're always happy to have you on. And today, oh my gosh, are we talking about something that's on the tip of everybody's tongues here? Obviously, staffing, employee, all the changes that are going on. And one of the things that kind of caught my attention in one of our conversations like a couple months ago is like the changing employee and potential employee expectations, because things are changing right before our eyes if we've been reading the headlines lately. So from your perspective, Jill, because you are living this day in and day out, what's the latest in the changing employee expectations and even potential employee expectations? Because there's a lot going on right out there right now, right?
Yeah. And I think that there's some sentiment that maybe, okay, are we slowing things down? We had so much news around the great resignation, attrition. And maybe we've talked about it a little bit less lately. Although if you talk it to anybody who's doing hiring, they will talk about how difficult it still is to attract and retain talent.
Yeah.
And I think that's because even though there may be fewer headlines about the great resignation right now, that voluntary quit rate is still higher than pre-pandemic by about 25%.
Wow.
So in 2021, the big news was 40% of employees are thinking about leaving their jobs next year.
Yeah.
We're still there. 40%, like going into 2022, 40% of employees are still thinking about leaving their jobs. And it continues to be kind of in three different ways. So you've got employees who are leaving their employers, and in some case, leaving their industry. Like, this is not, I looked at my life and this is not the place for me anymore. This is not the career for me anymore, and making a big shift that way. And then we've also got a group of people who are saying, I've looked at my life and I got to do something different with it. My kids need me. My aging parents need me, and leaving the workforce altogether. So that's kind of a different step as well from that side of it. And both of those things do make a difference into kind of who's available for the talent. And then, and that third area too. So we've got changing industries, but maybe still staying in the traditional workforce.
Right.
We've got leaving the traditional workforce. And then there's this third kind of area, which is leaving the traditional workforce, but still working. So maybe stepping out and starting a micro business or a different type of a consulting firm or something where an Etsy shop, perhaps, who knows, but something where the work is still happening, but not for another business or for another employer with that side of it. Yeah.
Gosh,
lots of movement.
So. I know that's a whole show right there. So why are these changes still happening? Because I just saw a headline the other day about the great resignation, but the tagline was, it might be the great regret. So I thought that I didn't read the story. I should have read the story, but I just went, isn't that interesting? So what's the why here? Why is this still happening? Are people still kind of up in arms about their current situation? And like, cause you kind of alluded to it in your first response there. So what's the why here based on what you've seen out there?
I think that we really had an awakening, I guess I would say, based on the pandemic, based on 2020, based on the last 24 months of the world that we've sort of endured. And I think people are at a place now where that really caused them to prioritize their own well-being. And so sometimes that's finding different jobs that align more with their mission. Sometimes that's finding more flexibility. So if I found I worked from home before the pandemic, I work from home still. But if I found that pre-pandemic, I worked from an office, and then during the pandemic, I worked from home, and I really love not having that 45-minute commute or something.
Yeah, me too. Right.
And then the pandemic gets over, and my employer's like, and I found that I was effective, and I wasn't, I wasn't as distracted, then my employer says, okay, you got to do that 45-minute commute again, come back to the office. You can see why a person would say, like, why?
Yeah.
And why they might question that. So if I experience this different level of effectiveness, this different level of work-life balance, And now my employer is saying, well, I don't care. Come back anyway. Mm-hmm. You can see how that would cause somebody to be like, this doesn't add up. Mm-hmm. And if I'm prioritizing my own well-being, I'm not going to endure that. I'm going to make a different choice with that.
Yeah. Didn't Apple do something like that? Didn't they? And they said, we want everyone back in the office. And then people were like, I don't think so. Man. And then I think they backtracked on that a little bit since then.
I think
so
we've heard it and seen it in a
other
number
companies as well.
Of organizations. I think there are some organizations, and certainly, I mean, we work in retail banking, right? Like credit unions are retail financial institutions. Mm-hmm. It's very difficult to imagine most credit unions being able to say, okay, well, no one has to come in anymore because we still have tellers. We still have people who are there. And then the question becomes though, so how do you make it worthwhile for an employee mm-hmm. to come in? And I think there are still a lot of employees out there. I mean, every time you see, you've probably seen those LinkedIn things where it's like, give a like if you want, give an idea if you, and most people will say, I want a hybrid environment. Most people are saying they want mm-hmm. sometimes to be in the office and sometimes to work from home. And it's because there are things that employees still find create greater value by being in the office. Mm-hmm. And I think that as credit unions, we have this opportunity to say, well, what is it aside from just being like, well, I want to be able to count that, you know, your seat's in a seat here, but to actually be able to say, we're going to use this in a way that adds value mm-hmm. to our employees. Mm-hmm. That's an opportunity that's there that if an organization isn't looking to do that, it's just another sort of, like why work here when there's so much demand for employees and other organizations that seem to understand who I am as a human?
Yeah.
And I'll tell you one thing that I found really fascinating about kind of the, you know, going back to the great resignation and this quit rate and who was leaving. I think I had ideas of who I thought was leaving. And I thought there was a lot of early retirement, you know, people who are maybe age 60 that were like, hey, you know what? I can go ahead and just step away right now. Maybe pick up a little side gig or something, but step out of the typical, you know, work environment. What I found that was really fascinating is that the age group that was actually most likely to quit during that, like the height of this great resignation in 2021 was like employees under the age of like 24. And that was so shocking to me because I'm thinking, well, those are the ones who kind of need to have jobs. They're still starting their career. Really, how much, like, if you've got 40 years of experience and you say, I'm going to go start my own business as a consultant, all right, you've got some credibility. Sure. If you have 40 months of experience, And so it was so fascinating to me. And then the supplemental information that I saw on it that I think is something that we as credit unions should really be paying attention to is that the reason that younger generation feels engaged with work is because for, you know, folks who are just out of college, maybe early in their career, that's their biggest social opportunity too. So you and I were just talking about our middle school age children. Yeah. Like most of our friends right now are probably our kids' friends' parents. Mm-hmm. But when you're 22, most of your friends are your coworkers and you're going to happy hour, playing intramural softball mm-hmm. or doing whatever kind of, so work is your social life too.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
when the pandemic hit and they didn't have that social life, it took away like the work related social life.
Completely.
It took away this huge employee engagement factor. Mm-hmm. And then it became a, well, gosh, my office isn't any better than driving Uber or doing online design, graphic design projects or something else, because it didn't have that built in interaction and engagement.
Yeah.
And when we look at, you know, again, going back to, okay, retail financial institutions, we need employees coming in. A lot of times our tellers, our FSRs, our loan officers are early in their career, maybe under the age of 25. Mm-hmm. Are we making sure we're not just saying, all right, well, you have to come into the office, but that we're still providing those engagement and social opportunities mm-hmm. and those chances mm-hmm. to build up networks with people who are coming in too.
Yeah.
And actually kind of leveraging that employee engagement factor with them too.
Yeah, that's so, so important. So, how are these expectations, these kind of changing expectations affecting attaining and retaining top employees today? Because it seems like it's such a moving target, as it always is, but it seems even more so now. It's like, okay, where do we go to keep this great employee that we've just discovered? Or how do we keep the employee that's been here for 10 years or 5 years? That's fantastic. So how do you manage that moving target?
So going back to that idea that, so 40% of people are saying, yeah, I'm probably going to leave my job. And then within that, maybe a third of them are going to go look for other traditional jobs. Mm-hmm. A third of them might be leaving the workforce altogether, as far as like retiring or stopping, you know, staying home and being a caregiver. And then a third are stepping out of the traditional workforce, but are still working in that, either the gig economy or creating their own business, becoming an entrepreneur. So in that case, if you look at that, it doesn't seem like the traditional workforce, the people looking to go find another business to work for, we aren't going to have enough of those employees to fill those openings that keep on creating with that. And so that really does create a situation where if I am an employee who's interested still in that more traditional workforce, going to work for a credit union with a boss in a building in an established business, mm-hmm. I can be pretty picky because there's more openings in that type of workplace than there are people who want to do that type of work now.
Yeah.
And so that does it does create a situation where an employee might go, a potential employee might go in and interview for a job and find out something during that interview process where they self-select out of the process and they decide not to take that job. Either they'll stay where they are or they'll look for other opportunities. A lot of candidates are looking at multiple opportunities right now. Mm-hmm. It's there's no scarcity in those jobs that are available. Yeah. And so that does... that does create a situation where if you want that top talent that's still looking for that traditional job, you have to be doing things that make your workplace more appealing. Mm-hmm. And it can certainly be, you know, in addition to seeing all of the prioritizing our own well-being that came out of this, we've also seen a big shift in the last couple of years to prioritize alignment with values, mm-hmm. to prioritize mission, to prioritize, you know, diversity, equity, and inclusion, certainly. Mm-hmm. And so it doesn't just come down to the organization that can deliver the highest compensation to an individual. It also comes down to being an organization that can be really clear on what its values are and really consistent and equitable mm-hmm. in the application of those mm-hmm. so that a prospective employee who's looking at an organization can easily say, yes, this does align with who I am and what I want to do. And I can feel good about making my choice to align with this organization. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I think that's a big shift. I think that there is a lot more consideration being put into a not just, will you meet my needs as an individual, but do we align in such a way that I will feel good about what I do in working for you and with mm-hmm. you?
Doesn't that, I'm so glad you said all that, because doesn't that bode well for credit unions? Because what you just described is the credit union wheelhouse, right? A deeper mission, you know, and working for something greater, for the greater good, rather than just a transaction, basically. So doesn't that... Doesn't that fall right in the credit union hands? So
it absolutely does. And I think it emphasizes the importance of making sure that when credit unions are saying, hey, this is who we are and this is what we're about, that they're living it too. And that they have those actions and evidence to support it. So for example, I've heard candidates asking questions about like, I saw that you made a statement of commitment to diversity, equity, and inclusion. What actions or evidence support that commitment you made? So tell me, like, show me a picture of your board of directors. Show me the diversity on that board. Tell me what you've done to address these issues of equity in the community. Show me what you have structurally, systemically in the organization as far as benefits or policies that really do create that equity. And when an organization is saying, well, we're not for profit, and they stumble on that, it can be a deterrent, which is almost, I think that's a place for credit unions to be really excited about the opportunity, but also to be really cognizant that it's not just words, it's actions that are there too. Because, you know, if this isn't me, but if I were somebody who's like, my biggest motivator is you know, be seeing how much money I can make. And I really want to work for a competitive organization you know, the more sales I make, the more compensated I am. Like, that's fine too, but like own that in the process so that when somebody does come in and is saying, well, I'm really motivated by money, that they know exactly how they can achieve that end. Mm-hmm. Whereas that person who's coming in and saying, I'm very motivated about doing work that matters to me can see that in action. Because the worst thing I think I could imagine is the organization that says, we're going to give you this great opportunity to align with your values. And a person says, yes, that's for me. And then they get there and they find that that was lip service and not reality. Yeah. And that's, I think, where we'll see people opt out maybe faster than a few years ago. We might have expected that people would say, well, but this is where I am now.
I'll give a chance.
Deal with it. Right.
Yeah. And the candidate has to know that going in, right? Because there are certain organizations that, I don't know, you know, if your ultimate goal is to make $1 billion or whatever, and I'm going to do whatever I can to do. I mean, some organizations don't exude that, or that's not their thing. So a candidate has to know going in that, okay, well, this isn't going to be, they kind of have to do their due diligence on their part, right? Like that one person who questioned that, say, show me the actions. What have you done here? Instead of just talking about it, let's walk the talk. So yeah, great, great point there for sure. And having said that, so what can credit unions do in this situation to really stand out? What are some things that they can do? Obviously show people that they are actually walking their talk, right? That should be a big one right up front.
Absolutely. So demonstrating that you're walking your talk, and then also looking for other ways. I mean, an advantage that even some of our largest credit unions are not huge global conglomerates, right? Yeah. And so we have opportunities really to give people the opportunity to shape and make a difference. So to listen to our employees, if our employees come in and say, you know, I took this job because I thought we were going to be able to make this difference, but I've observed that I'm turning down a lot of people who are coming in and asking for loans who really need our help. And you know, in a huge corporation, you might not be able to get your voice heard on that if that's a concern you have.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think in credit unions, the way we're structured, an organization can say, all right, let's look at that. Let's lean into that. Let's create a task force or a cross-functional team and provide people the opportunity to really dig into that. And because of why we're organized and the fact that we're not trying to reach the highest level of profitability to return to our stockholders, when we're faced with that evidence, we should be able to make the decision that does align. So even in a situation where an employee may come in and say, whoa, this isn't exactly what I thought I was signing up for, hopefully we have an opportunity to be able to say yes, and we can do better and give those employees, invite those employees in to being part of making that difference. And that's a huge, if we're looking at this and we're saying, all right, employee expectations right now are that they can work for an organization that's concerned about their well-being, that cares about their values, that aligns with them, you know, holistically with who they are as a human.
Yeah.
We're not going to get it right the first time, every time, but if we have those structures and systems in place where employees' voices are heard and they have the opportunity to contribute to that difference, then we can get it right the next time, or an employee won't regret that they came to work for us, because they'll be able to say, even if this place isn't perfect, I can make it a little more perfect with my contribution.
Yeah. Put your stamp on it for sure. Yeah. And that would just enhance the loyalty from that employee as well. Right. Because hey, I got some skin in the game here. I have a voice here. So that's good. So I can make some changes here, so I can make this a better place. So yeah, good stuff. Good stuff. All right, Jill, I'm going to ask you to get out your crystal ball.
Oh no.
Murky as it might be, as all of our, you know, every crystal ball on planet Earth is probably super murky. So especially the last 2.5 years. So how do you see it change? How do you see this stuff changing going into 2023, especially with that R word looming in the background, that recession thingy kind of hanging over our heads right now? So do you see it continuing down this road, or what's your viewpoint here?
Okay, so this is completely me having a crystal ball, which that's what I often say. Even a broken clock is right twice a day, right? So, like, maybe Maybe this will work, maybe this won't. But I'm just basing this on the fact that I think we're still living in place of such uncertainty. And I think if people are calling up their recent history and saying, boy, we went through a lot of unexpected, unpredictable, uncertain times over the last 2 years.
Yeah.
And I'm okay. Where I am today is fine. I think that people are going to continue to say, I don't know what all is going to happen around me,
yeah,
but I can prioritize my own well-being. I can prioritize my family's well-being. And so I think even with this recession looming, the unpredictability of the economy,
yeah,
I still think we're going to see people making choices for what helps them be the happiest, I guess is the term I'm using.
Nothing wrong with that. Yeah.
And I do think that that might mean a situation where somebody is still willing to make a job change. Because I think that where we are right now, that, you know, take out your crystal ball. Yeah, that's nobody knows what the future holds. We know what today holds. And I think we'll continue to see people trying to take the steps in the present tense for that level of happiness. And so doesn't mean I don't think people will still, yeah, I think we're going to see, you know, people continuing to try to save when they can. I think we'll see people making frugal decisions, even just with that side of it. But I don't think people are going to tether their lives or batten down the hatches that way, as maybe when we've gone into previous recessions, maybe they would have, at least as it relates to their career. I think people are still going to be willing to make those career changes, because yes, the economy is uncertain, but we know today if we're unhappy, and we can do something about that professionally too.
Well, that goes all the way back to your first response of our conversation, and that deals with, it was this great awakening that we had, you know, that employees had, like, hey, I can do better. I need a change. You know, this isn't the right fit for me. So, and then it goes back to your last response about happiness. And so where am I going to be most happy? Where am I going to be most fulfilled? And in a credit union situation, they have this mission that goes far, far beyond the transaction. And so that's, you know, if you want a deeper meaning, if you want to be more fulfilled, then that's the place for you. If you just want to go make sales somewhere, then there might be another organization for you. It's wherever you want to fit, you know, wherever you're going to be happy because of that great awakening that we experienced, you know, a couple of years ago, a year and a half ago. So yeah, I think they all kind of intertwine, they all kind of connect together, and one thing leads to another, and here we are. So,
And I think it kind of reminds me of, you know, a previous time in history when we saw like the scandal at Enron, for example, like people will talk sometimes about how my generation saw parents give decades of loyalty to an employer, and then maybe at the end of it all, not have that same loyalty given back to them. They lost out, even though they'd given that. And so it talks a lot about how my generation doesn't have the same loyalty to an employer as previous generations did, where they might not stay with that. And I think that's something that, sure, it impacted, you know, this generation that watched their parents give decades and decades of service and then get nothing, but it didn't change back. So it's not, the generation after mine didn't say, you know what I'm going to do? Go ahead and try to work 30 years for the same employer. It changed things permanently for people's relationship with work. And I think COVID, for the generation that's entering the workforce right now, will have that same impact on the permanent future of work, as far as people looking at it and saying, I don't have to go to an office where I clock in at 8:30, sit at a desk and clock out at 5:30. I don't think that's how, like, our kids saw us working from home during this, right? Yeah. Like, our kids work from home themselves with their schooling. Yeah. And my crystal ball, I think that's a permanent change for work, not just from people in the workforce today, but how people continue to view or predict their own careers to take place going forward. Doesn't mean that I think that nobody goes to an office anymore, but I do think it's just a different outlook than what it was before. And so today, somebody who switches jobs every 5 years, might not be such an anomaly that they would have been a couple of generations ago.
Yeah.
Next generation, you know, people who work from home are probably going to be at least as common as people who work in an office setting too.
That's the norm for sure. Oh my gosh. Jill, I could talk about this all day long. This is, I mean, I find consumer behavior fascinating. I find employee behavior fascinating just based on what we've been through. It's just something that will perpetually fascinate me. I really enjoy talking about it, especially to smart people like you who really kind of put into a mighty fine perspective. So yes, it's really good stuff. And this is not ending here at all. This is going to continue to evolve right before our eyes. So it's actually kind of exciting to watch, see how things are going. So yeah, thank you so much for this. Anything else to add to wrap up here? Because I think, again, this is going to go on and on and on.
Yeah, absolutely. So I love that you just said, oh, I find consumer behavior interesting. I find employee behavior interesting. It all comes down to human behavior, right? Yeah. Like any one of us at any given time, we're an employee, we're a consumer. And what it is I think the same things that we're seeing in consumers, and we maybe saw it a little bit earlier in the process, where consumers were saying, I expect this customized experience.
Yeah.
If Amazon knows what to offer me.
Yeah.
I think what we're seeing now is employees are saying, wait, if I can get that in every other area of my life, I've come to expect that customized experience from my workplace too.
Good point.
And yeah, it all comes down to human behavior. And that's what I think the most important thing we as credit unions can remember. And I think we're so well set up to remember is that we're in the business of humans. Like whether it's the humans who we employ who are helping run our organizations, or it's the humans we serve who are our members. When we keep that front of mind, I think that's where the success comes from, and where whatever this crystal ball may actually end up eventually demurkifying and showing us. I don't know if that's a word, demurkify.
It is today.
So whatever it ends up showing, if we can keep that role as in the business of serving humans top of mind, we'll be able to navigate that.
Yeah. And just to put a little tiny addendum on that, to humanize it a bit more, when you go into a career or a position like at a credit union, you're actually changing lives. You know, you're really helping people, you know, the credit union mission, you know, helping people, you know, so you're changing lives, and that is a phenomenal thing just in itself. So yeah, again, Jill, we could talk about this all day long, and I know you have work to do. So I appreciate your time as always. This is such good stuff, and look forward to our next conversation as this whole thing continues to evolve, and you're right there on the front lines of it. So we thank you for all the work that you do out there. So appreciate it.
Thank you, Mike. I appreciate it. Indeed.